Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter 1. It's kind of a busy Sunday. We've had a lot going on with baptism and just extra special prayer time. We're going to be doing communion later. So it just seemed like a great Sunday to do a message trying to get through 35 different verses. Big chunk today, but we're going to manage this and see how this next part of Ecclesiastes challenges us in some really unique ways. While you're turning there, let me start by saying this. One thing about living in Chicago is that it can be hard to find a good garage sale. Does anybody agree with that? I grew up in Northwest Indiana going to garage sales. My grandmother would get us up early. She'd have her route all figured out on where we were going to go, and we would drive through the neighborhood, the area, searching for that great deal. And sometimes we would find things. She's looking for something for the house or for the family. My sister and I looking for some type of toy or book or something like that, and we'd find something. But then more times than not, you'd go and you'd spend the whole day. And sure, it was fun being with grandma and singing songs in the car and just being silly. But we wouldn't find what we were looking for. And we would come home empty-handed and a little disappointed. Even in the days, though, that we didn't come back empty-handed, the days we didn't come back disappointed, the things that we would bring home that we got excited about in the moment, they inevitably became our own garage sale items. Or didn't even make it to a garage sale, but became, they might have been a treasure in the moment, but they also became junk. This next part of Ecclesiastes isn't about garage sales, but it is about our search for meaning in life and where we find meaning in life. And like someone on the hunt for that deal, we move around, we search things out, but we often come back empty. We don't find the thing that we're looking for, or we might find something that we're looking for, and it might seem okay for a little while, but we inevitably realize it didn't do what we wanted it to. Last week, we looked at the first section, and the central question of the book of Ecclesiastes was asked, what do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? What do people gain from all of their labors? He asked this question in the first part, and now, from here to the end of chapter 2, he's going to answer that question. He's going to show us where are the places where humanity goes to try to find gain, where they labor to try to find gain. Ecclesiastes 1 to 12 through 24 is all about the things in this life that we labor for, to look for meaning in life, for significance, for purpose. But it's going to be honest with us. Everywhere we look is going to come up empty. Before we jump into the passage, I know we've already prayed, but I like to pray again just as God would speak to us through his word. God, again, we just praise you. We thank you for being here. We thank you for that we can be in your presence. We thank you, God, for just this community. God, I pray as we open up your word this morning, I pray that you would be the one speaking, that you would challenge our hearts. I pray that, God, you would help us to see the truth of who you are, the truth of who we are. God, help us to search after you. Remove distractions. Help us to see what you have to say. Spirit, move in this place. It's in your name we pray. Amen. When we started this series last week, the thing I mentioned was that Ecclesiastes doesn't do subtlety. There's no beating around the bush. He just comes out swinging. And there's no different in this next part of Ecclesiastes. And he's going to make his first point very clear right away, that trying to find meaning in the things of this world is like chasing the wind. Trying to find meaning in the things in this world is like chasing the wind. Look what it says in chapter 1, verse 12. I, the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem. Now, this is the king. There's no one above him. This is the one who's over everything. If anyone has or could experience all of it, it's him. He has the resources. He has the time. He has the opportunity. No one's going to tell him no. So we need to know that what he's talking about over the course of this chapter and a half, what he's going to unpack, he's speaking about from personal experience, not from aspiration. He's not theorizing. He's saying, here's the reality, what I have experienced, and I can report back to you. And he says this in verse 13. I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and is striving after the wind. He has discerned, he's explored, he's experimented, he has tried and tested everything. He has done a deep dive in what he can observe about the human experience. God has left us to our choices. We have, humanity has said, God, we got it. And so God has left us to that business. And so we search out and we are figuring life out. We're going about our labors. And what he sees here, again, remember, and this is the king. No one's telling him no as he explores something. And he says he has tested and tried everything under the heaven, all that people labor at. And what has his conclusion been? It's meaningless. It's baffling. It's like trying to catch the wind. We can feel the wind. We can experience the wind. But none of us can take hold of it. None of us can grab it. And he says that trying to find meaningfulness, trying to satisfy the depths of our heart with the things that we can see and experience within this world is trying to give a headlock to a breeze. We can't hold on to that. We can't take that. It just can't be done. And he gives this proverb to support his point. He says that what is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. In the same way that something that's completely destroyed and bent up can't be made straight, you can't count something that can't be counted. The things in this world cannot be counted as meaningful because they are in essence not. You cannot count these things as meaningful. Yesterday, my daughter, my 18-year-old daughter Bailey and I, we both had two full bags full of clothes to take to the thrift store. So four bags between the two of us. She found this thrift store like a mile from our house in Andersonville that would pay you for your stuff. So we put them all into this grocery cart to walk a mile down there because I have street parking and my car was right in front of my house and I didn't want to lose my parking spot. So we're trucking this little cart with these four bags stacked on it, trying to go to the thrift store, and we're getting all excited about the money we're going to get. I tell her, you know what, I'll push the four bags there. You can drag the empty cart back. I go, man, we can like go out to eat tonight. Or, you know, you were talking about getting this. Like, I want to get this Lego set. Hey, we were like having all this conversation about what we were going to buy. We get there. We dump our bags on the counter. Like, okay, we'll go through them. They go through them. Bailey got $29 and I got $10. They literally gave us four bags of stuff back. If you were to look at the four bags we put on the counter and look at the four bags that we took home, you would have no idea that they did anything. We didn't want the stuff, and they didn't want the stuff. And so we're trekking these things back home, bummed, disappointed, feeling like we didn't get anything, just going to drop them in the green bin empty-handed, just going to enjoy chicken nuggets now because that's all we can afford with $10. But that's what he's saying about the things of this world. You're going to go and you're going to try to acquire these things. You're going to scrounge after these things. You're going to fight after this stuff, this experience, this whatever it is. And it's eventually going to be headed to the thrift store. And even the people there might not want it after you don't want it. That's what the things of this world are like. It's meaningless. It's like chasing after the wind. The late actor Matthew Perry, who starred in the show Friends, he was talking about his success, and he was talking about everything that he acquired by being this huge star from the show, and he says this, "For me, that feeling lasted about 8 months, the feeling of I've made it, I'm thrilled, there's no problem in the world. And then you realize that it doesn't accomplish anything. It's certainly not filling any holes in your life." That's exactly what Ecclesiastes is saying. He says everything that we pursue, everything we chase after, everything in this world that we try to find meaning in is like chasing after the wind. It doesn't fill any holes. And so that raises the question, if trying to find meaning in the things of this world is like chasing the wind, what are you chasing? When you think about the depth of who you are, when you think about your soul, when you think about everything's over at night and you're laying there asking, what's the point? What are the things you're looking for to answer that question? And are there the things of this world? Because we have to realize those things are like chasing the wind. And he's going to unpack that even more. He's going to, you know, make this general statement, but in the next section, he's going to get into the specifics. He's going to develop that point by saying that the things of this world aren't pointless, but it's all ultimately meaningless. And now this king is going to go through and give us the examples of what he's talking about. The things that we would try to count as meaningful, he's going to tick them all off one at a time. First, he's going to talk about we try to count wisdom and learning as sources of meaning and fulfillment. He says in chapter 2, verse 16, I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is but a striving after the wind. He's talking about getting smarter, about becoming wiser than anyone, becoming expert in all things, a PhD in humanity. And it's all chasing the wind, he says. Why? Well, verse 18, for in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. He isn't saying that learning's bad, but he's acknowledging the reality that the more that we learn, the more that we understand, it doesn't necessarily help us. The truth is the truth becomes more real, the truth of humanity's foolishness and how we value worthless things and worry about things that aren't doing what we want them to do. He then talks about that we try to count pleasure as meaningfulness. It says, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself, but behold, this also was vanity. Chapter 2, verse 2, I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? I search with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. He's having fun. He's out, whether it's just having fun in the moment, out partying, drinking, whatever it is. He's trying every hedonistic option possible. And he's saying, this is just silly. What use is this? Scholar Christopher Wright says, pleasure by itself is a poor contender for the ultimate meaning of life. And the good preacher found that out very quickly, he says. He tries to count wisdom and learning. He tries to count pleasure. He says we try to count entrepreneurial success. It says in chapter 2, verse 4, I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. He went about trying to become a person of success. And in verses 5 through 8, he gives his portfolio, all the properties, all the projects, all the success that he secured. It was a headline from this week is that there's a new richest man of the world. I knew a glaring headline that changed your life, but there's I don't even remember who it is. Whoever that person is, Solomon is saying that it's him. In his day, he's the richest person in the world. He's gained it all. He has it all. He's built it. He's planted it. He has everything. And laying in his bed at night, he looks at his portfolio and says, it's all chasing the wind. It's all worthless. And the one thing about this section is verse 10, I think, is very important for us to see. It says, it is so interesting. I didn't read verse 9 through 10, did I? Sorry, my mind is in way too many places. Let me start in verse 9. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and that was the reward for my toil. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind, nothing was gained under the sun. Like I said, verse 10 is very interesting because he says, my heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for my toil. It was great in the moment, but the sense of delight faded. The experience was great, but the experience ended. And everything that brought those experiences were just chasing after the wind. And last, he says, we try to count indulging in silliness or building a legacy, a spectrum of many things between those. Verse 12, so I turn to consider wisdom and madness and folly, for what can the man do who comes after the king? Only what has already been done. Then I saw that there is more gain in wisdom than in folly, as there is more gain in light than in darkness. The wise person has his eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yet I perceive that the same event happens to all of them. Then I said in my heart, what happens to the fool will also happen to me. Why then have I been so very wise? And I said in my heart that this also is vanity. He's acknowledging that, okay, when I look at everything, to be wise is way better than being a fool. To live life with discernment and thinking through things and responsibility is way better than being an idiot. But the same thing is going to come to both those people. Death is not a selector of people, and it's going to come to both. That is the event that will come to both of them. He says in verse 16, for of the wise, as of the fool, there is no enduring remembrance, seeing that in the days to come, all will have been long forgotten. How the wise dies, just like the fool. Death is the great equalizer, and it shows us that all of these things that we're acquiring, we're not going to take with us. And all of these things that we're striving after are going to fall on the garage sale table. They don't bring the meaning that we're longing for, and they don't change anything that's coming. In verse 16 here, again, it has the idea of remembering. John Golden Gay explains the nuance to that remembering implies keeping something in mind and living in light of it. Which is really interesting in here is that even within all of this knowledge and all that this gains and all that people get and acknowledging the brevity of life, as humans, we still don't get the truth that these things that we long for don't do us any good. These things that we try to find meaning in don't give us that meaning. It's all chasing after the wind. When he said in verse 14, I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity, that's the all that he's talking about. When we go for wisdom, when we go for learning, pleasure and fun, success, working hard, making a name for yourself, it's meaningless. Now, the qualification has to be said. He's not saying it's pointless. John Golden Gay says he doesn't imply that the things he investigates were totally pointless. He means he didn't find ultimate meaning in any of those pursuits. He didn't discover the secret of life. And so it's really important, this nuance that he's showing us here and how we see what we put our hands to, that your work is not pointless. Community is not pointless. Your hobbies are not pointless. Family is not pointless. Fun is not pointless. But it's not going to give us the ultimate things that our hearts are longing for. And when we look for these good things to do what only God can do, they become bad things. They become meaningless. When we're trying to have them do what they can't do, we're just chasing after the wind. So God wants us to be thankful for what's before us. It's not pointless, but he doesn't want us to expect something from it that it can't do. What does that end up with? Where do we end up with that then? Well, his last point, that meaningfulness is found in life with the Lord. Meaningfulness is found in life with the Lord. Look at verse 17. So I hated life because of what is done under the sun, because what is done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is vanity and a striving after the wind. I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me, and who knows whether he will be wise or a fool. Realizing the meaninglessness of wind chasing has caused him to get bitter The tone of his asking, what's the point of all of this? I'm hating life, he says. In verses 20 to 21, he unpacks a little bit more about the person who's going to get his stuff. And then he says in verse 22, what is a man from all the toil and striving of heart with which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow and his work is a vexation. Even in the night, his heart does not rest. This also is vanity. Lane Provost says that this is the confessions of a workaholic. Somebody that's just been at it and busy and gaining and working and succeeding. But at the end of the night, they ask, it hasn't done what I wanted it to do. If none of this is worth it, then why am I doing this? And the fact that I keep doing it, he says, is making me angry. But then it says, I mean, this is a downer part of the whole thought process, right? But then he turns on a dime. I'm angry. I hate life. This is worthless. And then verse 24, there is nothing better for a person that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat and who can have enjoyment? Verses 22 to 24 are one part of the book of Ecclesiastes, where like I said last week, you want to look at the author and go, are you good? Are you okay? Because he goes from saying, I hated life, to there's nothing better for us that we should find fulfillment in life. There's a great chasm between these verses, between hating life, being buried under the toil and pursuit, compared to enjoying life and all that it brings. But this is the great message of Ecclesiastes. This is what the entire book is trying to get us to realize, that life is to be enjoyed. Life is to be experienced at its fullest. Life is to be embraced, but with the Lord. When we are finding our meaning in him, when we are finding our fulfillment in him, then we can enjoy all of this that we're meant to enjoy. But too often than not, rather than finding our meaning in God, we try to find our meaning in the stuff of this world, and then in turn we miss the source of meaning, and that which we worship disappoints us. God is trying to make it really clear, the worship of your heart should be on him, not on the stuff that we see. We shouldn't be chasing after the wind. We should be chasing after the Lord. Our identity is him, not in our stuff. And when we find our identity in him, we can live life to its fullest. We can enjoy life the way it was meant to be enjoyed. Christians should be the people who are having the most fun and the most enjoyment in life. And if that's not happening, it's because our eyes are on the wrong thing and they're not on the Lord. Because when they are on the Lord, our worries about this life are minimal. The things that we have to process are different because we're not looking to them to give us meaning. We already have that meaning. These are just things I can experience for the good things that they are from God. He has given me this life, and it's a gift, and I'm going to experience it as much as I can because I don't have to find meaning in it. I find meaning in him. This is just something awesome to experience within that life he's given me. Ephesians 2, 8 and 9 says, for it's by grace you have been saved through faith, and this is not from yourself. It is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast. We are not meant to work for salvation. We're not meant to work for meaning. We're not supposed to work or try to find meaning in things, be them outside of ourselves or something that we produce. Life is found in Jesus and Jesus alone. Lane Provost says, the good life is the life centered on God and not centered on striving after the self. And so it raises the question, what are you finding meaning in? What are you chasing after, like I said before? Are you finding that in Jesus, or are you finding it in something in this world? Again, the stuff is not bad. Job, work is not bad. Hobbies are not bad. Relationships are not bad. Success is not bad. All the stuff is not bad. But they're a horrible God, and they're a horrible Lord, and they can't provide life. Only Jesus can do that. And that's what the cross is all about. It's him going to the cross so that our sin and the penalty of our sin could be paid for. so that we would not have that held against us, but that he can give us life, restoring us back to God, that we could have and know the life we were designed and made to be a part of. You were meant to be in life with God. That is where our meaning comes from. We are meant to be in life with him, find meaning in him, and enjoy this life with that meaning coming from him, not the stuff. And so we need to turn our eyes away from the things of this world and turn our eyes to Jesus. What are you chasing? Where are you finding meaning? Let today be the day to turn away from all that other stuff and turn to Jesus. Let today be the day that you turn away from anything you've been chasing and you run to him. There's no better day than this topic than to end with communion. I'm going to ask if our team could pass out the elements. They're...